This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Off the Record with Trivago Line is sponsored by BTC, CG Atlantic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. So glad you could join us today. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. Or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. You can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So today, I want to talk about a couple of things, but, you know, it doesn't happen often, thankfully, but it does happen that you read a news story, you read about something happening to someone, and for the most part, the only thing you know, you read the name, you hear some details, but you don't know the person. You're so removed that it's not a personal issue for you because you really don't know the person. And as human beings, unless we have a personal connection to people, while we can empathize with a situation or even sympathize with a situation, we still have a certain distance, psychological, mental distance from the issue. But the other day I got a call saying to me, you know, your neighbor, Kenzie. Yeah, this was for my niece. She says, you know, he was killed in prison. And I was stunned, shocked that this happened. Because for me, Kenzie was a personality in the neighborhood, clearly with mental issues he was dealing with, but still lucid in a way where, like, he called my name regularly, walking up and down the street, shouting to my house, you know, not so negative things about me. Sometimes he'd say, oh, you see, Trivago Lang, you can be the next prime minister of the Bahamas. I mean, just shouting it and calling other people's names. And you know, when his family were caught up in Dorian, they actually, my house wasn't occupied at the time, and they broke into the house. Well, they broke the window, the door, glass door downstairs, so they could flee from the flood, and they stayed in my upstairs floor on the house, in the house during the storm. And even after that, he would sometimes walk right to and inside my house. I mean, unannounced. You know, almost saying this, you know, my house and me and my mommy. And his mother passed away too. So all of the mental issues that he had to contend with on top of the tragedy of losing his mom and dad, you know. So I had to be concerned about him because of his unwellness, but never saw him as a violent threat of that nature. But I had to be cautious to, you know, to deal with the matter. But he was a neighborhood personality. You know, the last I saw him, he showed up to my door, my back door, to show me this book. He said a book he had written. He had lots of pages and pages and pages of stuff with writings on them, right? And I said, Kenny. I said, you know, I can't deal with this at the moment because I was getting ready to go on the show, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he had been gone from the neighborhood for a little while. And so, as usual, we suspected he was in Nassau at Sandlands, where he would, from time to time, go get some help and come back more calm and what have you. As clearly, I think he was medicated. But so I'm reading this story in the Nassau Guardian. And I have to say, I must confess, I'm like with the family who's asking, how did he end up in prison? I'm asking the same question because he is a known mental patient. Known mental patient. And it was typical that when he started causing disruption in the neighborhood, that if the ambulance were called, they would put him in the ward. And then at times he'd go to Nassau and he would end up in Sandlands. How he ended up in prison, having a fight with another mental patient, you know, is, I don't know. But this isn't just a story for me. This is a live, real, connected personality and family. And I have to know that they are devastated by this. I mean, just devastated, notwithstanding the challenge of having to deal with their loved one as a mental patient. I know that they're, because I could feel it myself, I can feel it. That just don't seem right. It don't sit right. And it is another instance of mental patients. Oh my God, what a struggle they are. They are a struggle for their personal selves to be trapped in a mind that won't cooperate with you in ways that allows you to function in the society in a way that doesn't make you a pariah, doesn't make you a challenge, doesn't make you a problem. They're challenged because they have family members who have to contend with this abnormality of functionality and have to organize their lives around both protecting, providing for, and dealing with the disruption that your mental illness can cause. And then they are a challenge because somehow we haven't found the most gracious way to deal with it all together. No, Sandlands is there and the people there, they do the job and God bless them. And they're psychologists and others who, psychiatrists and others who have to deal with them. But man, too many floating mentally ill people occupy our territory. And I'm blaming all of us. Many of us just aren't sensitive enough. We're not skilled enough. We're not capable enough to know what to do with them. And it is a tragedy. I had a general who, Ron Davil, God bless his soul, whose son struggled with mental challenges. And in the end, he fell victim to his son's challenge. I mean, it's a struggle. It's a struggle. And my condolences to Kenzie's family and just, man. And I hope they can get some answers because they deserve it. Because I have the same query. Like, how did he end up in prison? Prison? I mean, I'm not questioning the police. I'm just asking for how it happens. So you can understand, like, what's the process? How do we deal with these kinds of circumstances, these kinds of people? He was a person who, like, he had people that cared about him, loved him, you know, connected with him, you know, and known, well known in the neighborhood, you know, for all of his all of his good and challenging circumstances are well known in the neighborhood. The neighborhood I live in. In my yard many, many times. At my gate many, many times. Walking up and down many, many days. Shouting my name. Sometimes in the, listen, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Shouting my name. I'm not gonna condemn us. We have ways in which we are responding to the mentally ill in the country. We do, and Sandlands is the most visible and concrete and tangible way that's being done. But as family members, as communities, in too many instances, we're not equipped. We're not equipped to deal with folk who present mental challenges, sometimes born of nothing other than being born with the wrong genes, being born in a circumstance where a trauma has created an injury to the brain that has made the brain mentally unstable, born sometimes of some disease that you have that damages the brain, that causes that dysfunction. Just so you're the victim of coming to planet Earth and living through your birth process, but in a way in which your brain, for some reason or the other, just cannot work as it was intended to work. And that is your fate. And that is your thing for a lifetime, sometimes, for people. And what a struggle. But I've seen it, listen, I've seen it up close. I've seen mental illness up close, and I've seen how it is such an, it's these people aren't trying to be mentally ill, they ain't trying to be. And sometimes we grow impatient, we don't have the empathy to be able to understand, appreciate what they are having to contend with. Sometimes they are vulgar in their language. Sometimes they are violent in their ways. Sometimes their manners can be really put you off because of their hygiene or other things and what have you. And so we have to deal with all of that. And sometimes we just don't have the capacity. We don't. And God puts on this planet some special people, some nurses, some doctors, some others who family members and friends who fortunately, in some instances, have the grace to do it. And more, as you move through the Bahamas, especially in Grand Bahama and New Providence, you're seeing people on the streets plagued with mental illness. We saw it before, even when I was a younger child, but not as many people as we see now. Of course, some of that is we have a larger population than we had before, but I also believe that there's some biological, some circumstantial, and some social stuff that's driving mental illness to levels that we have not seen before. And we need to find a way. Hopefully we can find a way, some more ways to help with it. 44 years old, that's what he was, 44. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Hey Lisa, Ahair Fidelity is free. Women Plus Seminar is back.
Oh yes, it is. My ladies and I are ready to go.
Well, I heard it's open for men too, so you know my crew and I will be there.
The highly anticipated free Fidelity Women Plus Seminar will be held on Saturday, October 29th at the Bahama Convention Center as we explore solutions towards achieving financial freedom.
The Women Plus Seminar is free and includes breakfast, 8 sessions, plus over $8,000 in prizes and surprises. Registration and breakfast begin at 8 a.m. with sessions from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Space is limited, so register now for free at fbbwomanplus.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon with all its challenges. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Someone texts to say sorry about your loss, Z. Some people are so uncaring, especially towards those with mental challenges. I pray that his family gets to the bottom of it. God sees and knows it all, that's for sure. His text says, Mr. Lang, is it appropriate to blame all of us when citizens don't have the resources? They can only defer the matters to government agencies. Should the blame be on government agencies and law enforcement? In this case, blame is irrelevant. I'm not blaming all of us. I started to say that and then adjusted myself. So, that doesn't get us anywhere. Okay. I was appealing for us because all of us can take responsibility, even if we're not to blame. Right. I mean, if your child causes a fire in your home, standing around trying to argue about who caused the fire as opposed to putting the fire out is not where you want to be, right? So I draw on us to say we as a society need to find ways. And you're right, there are some people, they don't have the resources to do it. Families don't have the resources, communities to do it. But I'm not going to blame a government agency either, right? Because a government agency can't know if your family member has a mental problem if you don't say nothing to them. So I'm not blaming anybody. What I'm talking about is what is to be done. And this is why some of us, our mentality has to change to know that the dialogue isn't about blame. Blame is the excuse of the unworthy. That's the practice of the irresponsible. That is the domain of the weak, blame. Scientists and reasonable people want to find reasons and causes to prevent. People who are trying to avoid blame are simply trying to protect themselves when the protection needs to be on the people who are the victims. That's where the protection needs to be, on the victim, not absolving myself. Oh, I'm not to blame. Okay, great. The house is still on fire. The victims are still being raped. Right? So when you get and I get to say, it ain't me, all right, grand. We now live in a society still plagued by a challenge, but it ain't me. That's not where I'm going with life, man. That even ain't worth it. Compassion says, even if I'm not to blame, is there something I can do? Is there something we can do? Even if it's just to lift my voice in sympathy toward them that are victims of a challenge and to cry out for help, that's the idea, right? I just think that sometimes we focus on not quite the right thing. And we only get sidetracked by doing so. Anyway, so the leader of the opposition, Mr. Michael Pintard, Michael Pintard says that the government broke the law. So the government broke the law by having the government pay for a political trip and then requiring the Progressive Liberal Party, to repay, reimburse the government. Now, I think the question of whether the government broke the law or not is a legitimate question. A legitimate question as to whether, in fact, that happened. Because, again, whether or not this broke the law really depends on a couple of things. Right? And here's what it depends on. Depends on whether the government, how this process happened. So take for instance, right? The treasurer of the Bahamas, the accountant general of the Bahamas, a permanent secretary of the Bahamas, can only make a payment out of the consolidated fund that a permanent secretary, the accountant general, the people concerned with the treasury, can only make a payment out of the consolidated fund in accordance with the law. Okay? They are not operating on the basis of any loose discretion. They are operating on the basis of the law. Payments have to be made in accordance with the Financial Administration and Audit Act, the Constitution, and any other requisite law that governs how expenditure is to be made out of the consolidated fund. One rule certainly is you're making payments on behalf of the government. All right? So that you're making payment for government business. That's for sure. There is no law that I am aware of. There is no procedure that I am aware of that authorizes a payment out of the consolidated fund for a political party's operation at all. I don't know of any law that permits that says you can do that. Now, I don't know that, I don't know. I'm only saying, I have to see, but I don't know that there's any law that says you can't do it either. But I do know that there is every understanding that such a thing is not to be done, right? I know that, but whether I can take you to section one of subsection two, clause A of a particular piece of legislation that says, no fund shall be paid for political purposes. I'm not suggesting it isn't there, but I don't know that I've ever seen it, because I don't know anyone who has ever thought it could be done, that it would be done. I don't know of anyone who's ever thought that that was possible. Okay? So all expenditure should be made on and behalf of the government of the Bahamas by undertaking official government business. Right? So that's the first thing. Now, as to reimbursing the government spent monies, the purposes of which have been determined to be political, then nothing prohibits the government from being reimbursed for that. Nothing does. Because the treasurer can receive funds from any source it desires. I imagine outside of illegal proceeds, and that's even illegal proceeds are not seen the way you see it, because the Proceeds of Crime Act permits the government to take proceeds from crime, confiscate them, and use them for government purposes, even to fight crime. So don't tell me, oh, the government shouldn't be taking illegal funds. And the government, if it confiscates illegal funds that with the proceeds of crime can use that to buy police equipment, to buy guns for the police and all them kinds of things under the law of the Bahamas. So that the government could receive monies as reimbursement for some purpose that was deemed political that ought not to have been paid for by itself, that's not an issue. I don't believe there's any lawful, unlawful means to do that. The question is there a lawful means for the government? Listen to me very carefully. Very carefully. You all know that our aim is to help advance our understanding of how government works. The question is, and if I didn't get from the opposition that this was the question they are asking, but because they essentially made an allegation that the government broke the law. But the question is, does the law of the Bahamas permit the government of the Bahamas to make a payment from the consolidated fund where it is known that the expenditure relates to a partisan political purpose? That's the question. Meaning, can the Accountant General of the Bahamas make a payment for a trip for a member of the government that the member is a purely partisan political trip, having been so told in advance of that payment being made? Can that lawfully be done? That's the question. That's different than the Accountant General having been told this trip is an official trip, a government trip, and therefore makes a payment so that it funds that government trip, but in retrospect, it was determined that it was a political trip, and now the government has to be reimbursed because the trip should not have been paid for in the first place. That is a different matter, and is not necessarily a legal issue as much as it is a legal question as to whether in advance of doing so, can the government pay for a political trip? That's the question. That question cannot be answered. Well, you have to look at the law to know. My intuition tells me, my experience tells me, it cannot be done. It would not be done. It should not be done. That's what my experience, intuition tells me. I do not have a particular legal basis for it, but it could well exist. Could well exist. Because, I mean, if we have general orders that prohibit partisan political activity by senior members of the civil service, I can't see how that seemed. The law of the Bahamas would not prohibit those people from using resources of the Bahamas for partisan political purpose. Now, you could use it. So, for instance, a political party could ask to use a park and then have to do whatever requisite payments to use the park for campaign purposes. Because that's part of your democratic process. But I can't see how it is lawful and permissible in advance of the payment to know that it is political, that the payment is going toward, and that is lawful in the Bahamas. I can't see that, but even though I can't today point to the law that would be breached in respect of that. There may well be, but I'm just saying I don't recall myself, and I do think it's a legitimate, absolute legitimate question, right? So, this is quite a point at which to be in respect to this issue. The Prime Minister, when asked, according to an article in the Nassau Guardian, when asked about this by the leader of the opposition, did not proffer an answer. The leader of the opposition asked, what protocols permits such a thing to happen? But the leader of the opposition asked, what permits the government to get paid back for the trip? But that's an issue, but not the central issue. The issue is what permitted the government to make the payment in the first place, and was the payment made knowing it was a political trip? That's the question. Did the Prime Minister and his colleagues know they were going to take a political trip, cast that trip as an official trip, require the government to pay for that trip, and then, after the fact, have the trip reimbursed by the Progressive Liberal Party? Or was it that they determined they were making an official trip that then was paid for and then got converted into a political trip, and now they're asking for that reimbursement? The details matter. And that's why I said that the Prime Minister could, in giving a fulsome explanation of it, could help people better appreciate how this evolved, because quite frankly, the explanation as to how it evolved is not so clear. Is not so clear. And so I think this is part of why it continues to. So it says, and so the Prime Minister said, Davis said that this, according to this article, that to travel commercial to Bermuda, he would have had to spend one night in New York going one way and one night coming back, which would have meant he had too much time out of the country. And so we then explored the possibility of a charter, he said. Listen to this now. And he says it started off on $150,000 or so. And then that's when the trip started slipping out of my mind. We were able to use a Bahamian aircraft, Western Air, who agreed to the trip at a reasonable cost. So by this time, this was like 2 days before the trip, I was thinking whether I was about to postpone the trip for another time, but since we were able to do that, that's how it evolved, and I was as by country. It says, in the meantime, the Premier also invited the PLP, because PLP of Bermuda, which was formed by the PLP in the Bahamas, they invited the PLP to come as well. So once they said they were coming as well, I said, okay, they can come. We had a 50-seater plane that was being chartered, and they came. And so I then said, listen to me. I'm going to take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Langyos. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together. Mr. Campbell, we have your test results. Do you want the good news or the bad news first?
Good news. No, wait, bad news. Give it to me straight, doctor.
Your blood work came back. You've got erythrocytes all over.
Oh, no, this can't be happening.
Here's the good news. That just means red blood cells. It's a good thing. You're completely fine.
With 99% of medical claims paid in 5 days, we're like a doctor who doesn't want to be a comedian. CG Atlantic, medical in life. Good like that.
Isn't it time you conquered your investment goals? With RF Mutual Funds, you can access a range of investments within a single fund. That means you get access to top-performing local stocks, along with exposure to international markets. Add expert management and competitive returns like 25.16% with our targeted equity fund, and you won't just meet your investment goals, you'll conquer them. Get started with RF Mutual Funds today at group.com.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we're talking about the trip again, only because the opposition accused the government of breaking the law. The government broke the law. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-425-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I hesitated when I was reading the explanation given by Prime Minister, because I know Prime Minister Davis. I know Prime Minister has a keener mind, a more rational, a more logical, more organized mind than the explanations being proffered in this article conveys. Okay? And I'm saying that, listen, I'm a talk show host. I have to be fair and I have to be straight. I try to do that with every single body. If you want to get politically offended by what I say, I'm so sorry. That's not my intention. But the Prime Minister needs explanation for this. He does. It doesn't sit right, how it runs at the moment. It doesn't sit right. It really doesn't. It's not clear. The issue is, this is the issue, this is the bottom line. Did the Prime Minister know prior to authorizing payment out of the consolidated fund for this trip that it was a political trip? Because all of this boils down to what the Prime Minister knew. The Prime Minister is also the Minister of Finance. What the Prime Minister knew and when did he know it? That's what this boils down to. What did he know? When did he know it? Did the Prime Minister know in advance it was a political trip prior to payment by the Treasury? Which means if he knew in advance that it was a political trip and the Treasury paid for the trip, it means the Treasury paid for a political trip. A trip known by the Prime Minister to be a political trip. But the Prime Minister made it. After, if that is true, the question then boils down to, can the Prime Minister, the Minister of Finance, authorize a payment out of the Consolidated Fund for a known partisan political purpose? That's the question. That's a question of policy. That's a question of governance. That's a question of law. That's the reality. All this other stuff about how many people you took and all that kind of stuff is irrelevant. Because if this was an entirely official trip, if they took 100 people on it, And it cost the government of the Bahamas $2 million, and people cried about it. Trivago Lang would be saying to you today, well, that's a government decision. The government must know what it seeks to do in carrying that many people and paying $2 million. We'll have to see at the end of the day whether we can get some benefits from it. But if you pay that off for an official trip out of the consolidated fund, there's no question to be raised. It's an official trip. And the government has the discretion and the right to make determinations about where it travels, for what official purpose, with how many people, and you could row and cry and run on about it. None of that bothers me, because the government can do that for official trips. Sometimes it's very small. Some of y'all don't see. You see big delegations. I've been and traveled on behalf of the government of the Bahamas where I was the only person traveling myself. Only person. Even though I was told in many instances you should travel with somebody official when you go. But I tried to save the government of Bahamas money. I thought I could do the purpose. It was 2 days or so and get it done. But that has happened. Nobody says, why Lang traveling by himself? That isn't right. Nobody says that. They only travel when you carry a big crowd. But if the government chooses to do that, no problem. But can the government of the Bahamas forget the reimbursement? The reimbursement is irrelevant. That the government is being reimbursed for a trip now deemed political by the prime minister, that's not an issue. That's appropriate. It's appropriate that the government be reimbursed. That's not against the law. There's no law against that. In fact, that's a correct thing to do. The question is, was it lawful to be done in the first instance if it was known in advance that the trip was political? That's the question. Only issue on which a breach could emerge. All right? Okay. This person says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. In this case where the government funds was used for payment for a trip that was later determined that the trip was political, I think the PM did the right thing. I agree with you. Now, no law was broken. I agree with you. If the payment was made knowing it was a political trip, now that's a different situation. I agree with you. You and I are on the same page with that. So the PM did say that the it was a political decision. Right. The question now is, when was the decision made that it was political, and did a payment from the Treasury follow that decision? That's the issue. This text says, Z, the sad thing is that these people underestimate our intelligence, hence they pile up lies on top of lies and trip over themselves and couldn't care less just how incompetent and dishonest they appear. It is, and reporters do not care to hold them accountable. You need to hear the audio of the PM's explanation of the Bermuda trip. Stumbling and bumbling, suck my teeth. Okie dokie. This text says, If PM Davis says he decided 48 hours before the flight that he decided that the trip was a political trip, so he agreed that if he would take the 40 plus other people with him and reimburse the Treasury for expenses. So explain to me how they got authorization to cover and pay the expenses for the 40 plus other persons on the trip, including hotels, per diem, ground transportation, etc. As a former, you all always call me junior finance minister, right? Okay. But that's not true, but no problems. As a former junior finance minister, explain how you would get those authorizations for government to pay in advance with less than 48 hours before a trip for 40 plus political persons with expectation of being reimbursed. Well, that's easy. That's easy because the government of the Bahamas, the Ministry of Finance, has a credit card. And the financial secretary can use the credit card to make payments on behalf of the government of the Bahamas, so long as there is space on the card. So that's possible to be done. It is also possible to move the Treasury to work faster than usual by abandoning all other things as it does to do. And so that's possible too. But I do agree that under ordinary circumstances, it is not so easy to make these kinds of determinations in such a short period of time and get everything paid up. But you can do it with a credit card, and you can do it if the vendor is prepared to take an IOU from the government, and the government can do that. A vendor can say, yeah, we'll deal with that, and then we'll deal with all the payments afterwards. That's possible as well, right? That happens every day to the government. So they determined it was a political trip 2 days before the plane left. PM Davis asked this in the House of Assembly. Okay. It says, so if the FNM indicated that the PLP broke the law, how is the matter handled now? Is it forwarded to the police or to the courts? Well, the thing about it is, FNM says the government broke the law. Well, you have to point to the law that the government breaks, right? And even if the government broke the law, it depends on what the law says about the break. You see, some of y'all don't realize, but every law doesn't say you pay a price or penalty for doing so. There are laws for reporting on the financial, on fiscal accounts, etc. If you break that law, nothing happens. You just have to go back and fix it, right? But so there's no question of going to the court. The breach, every breach of the law isn't a criminal offense. Some are civil issues, and some are, you know, and they don't, every breach of the law doesn't carry like fine or sentencing or that kind of thing, because some breaches of the law just to point out that you breached the law, especially in respect to the government. Who you gonna lock up? Who you can go to jail? Who you can send to jail if you find the government guilty? The law doesn't work quite like that, right? But it the law exists to give boundaries to the of people. So the law is saying to the government, listen, you really shouldn't go that far. You shouldn't go that far. This is as far as you should go. This is as far as the citizenry is prepared to let you go. Now, whether there's a punishment for that, and oftentimes in respect of the government, there is not. The punishment is how you get to look and say, oh, you break the law? Okay, you come back to me next time talking about you want me to vote for you. That's how you get to deal with the government when it breaks the law in that fashion. But to be clear, I hope you all understand what I'm saying, that the issue isn't breaking the law by virtue of repayment. Because if the government is defrauded out of monies, if the government has money stolen from it, if the government pays an expense it ought not to have been paid, it ought not to have paid, reimbursing the government makes sense. That is appropriate to be done. And therefore, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Now, paying for stuff in advance, knowing that it's a purpose for which that payment ought not to be made, that's a different story. So let me give you an example. We're talking paying for a political trip. Let's suppose the government knows that one of its agencies is buying marijuana for its staff to smoke at a retreat. They know that. We want our staff to have a nice high day. And we're going to give them some marijuana to smoke. So we require $2,500 from the government to go buy some ounces of marijuana. Can the government do that? Can the government lawfully do that? Huh? Can the cabinet of the Bahamas approve for the government to go spend $2,500 on weed so some staff members of the government agency can smoke weed at a retreat? Y'all listening to the Zine, your host. I'm going to take a break for the news. And when we come back from the news, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after the news break.
So starting today, I'm breaking down.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, just let me know that you're not alone. I'll up if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. Very busy, very active, in some ways sad Thursday afternoon, but I can only afford in time to have some chips for lunch. I talk about chips now in the bag. If you want to call us, and I understand somebody was on the phone, I'm so sorry. I just saw the message. It was sent a different place. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. This text says, Mr. Lang, I'm tired of this story, and I'm ready to move on. But that won't happen. The FNM has a good bone to chew on, so let them have it all. Have it. I don't blame them. Nothing will come of this issue. It's the PLP people time, you see. If the government had not been called out on this, there was going to be no reimbursement. But do you think this was the first time we, the people, paid for these political trips? Of course not. One of the first trips PM Minnis made was to Texas. The superficial reason given left you scratching your head until other more plausible reasons emerged. I could go on, but we still have a lot of work to do to strengthen our governance procedures. These current leaders ride us like donkeys. But your young son, yeah, we hope our children will certainly fix it. Certainly hope so. That's why I'm going to teach, share, communicate what I can about the processes that I understand, explore them where I don't understand them, that maybe we'll get better at it in the next generation and do better at it. You know, what will come of it? I agree with you. I don't know that anything will come of it, per se. You get your money back. In the future, there'll be some more caution, I believe, displayed in the way these things are handled. It's just like the money with the furniture in Europe. It's remarkable to me how that money was spent. Remarkable to this extent, not because of the cost so much, you know, because things are expensive in Europe and you can decide that you want to invest in things that might have longevity and retain value over a long period of time. Because if you're going to have a mission in the place, you can have the mission in the place for 20 years. If the furniture lasts for 20 years, then you amortize that $600,000 over 20 years and you might come up with a reasonable investment. That's not the issue. The issue I found with it is this. is the foreign affairs I know and the Ministry of Finance I know, this is how it works. You have a budget to do things. You have a current account budget. And you have a capital account budget. The budget says for outfitting a residence for a ambassador or a consul general, the budget is X. And so you then determine with the permanent secretary endorsed that this is the budget that you have to do such and such. You go and you look for items, you get quotes, and you send those items in through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and it looks at the budget item and budget and says, this is $300,000 and the budget is only $50,000. This can't happen. You could get vexed if you're the ambassador and say, what you mean it can't happen? And then you could call the prime minister. And you said, Prime Minister, I'm trying to get this and that, the next thing. These people telling me no. And the prime minister make a call and say, and who happens to be the Minister of Finance, and makes a call and say, go ahead and let it happen. Work it out. Move some money from this and put it in that to do that. That's how it happens. So I can tell you, if $600,000 in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for that expenditure, you could blame the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, the former Prime Minister, Dr. Hubert Minnis. You could blame him because he would have had to authorize it. There's no other way that it could have happened. I'm not blaming no ambassador. Ambassadors only spend money they're authorized to spend. I don't blame them. I'm blaming one little link. If you as an ambassador have a fancy taste, if your taste is elitist, if your taste is really expensive, I can't blame you for that. You ain't responsible for protecting the government money unless you do it in relation to ensuring that the money that's dispensed to you is spent in accordance to the budget that has been allocated to you. I blame the people who authorize you to spend the money if they took the approach that, oh, we could afford to do this and let's lavishly spend the money. That's how it works. When you know the process, you know where to put the appropriate cause and blame for something. And in our country, when the money is spent, the first lord of the treasury is the prime minister. Lord of the treasury, he above all others have the responsibility of protecting the public purse. Above all else, not even the minister of finance. It happens to be that they are both one and the same now. But he, above all else, is called the first lord of the treasury. And he has that ultimate responsibility. So whatever nickel or dime is spent that you like or don't like how it was spent, or if it was unlawfully or lawfully spent, you go ahead and look right to the prime minister and say, we're broke. What's your government doing? Whose government is it? No minister can say, my government. Ministers say that, but they shouldn't say that. Only the prime minister gets to say, in the governor now, that's among cabinet ministers, not the governor general. Only the prime minister gets to say, my government. Why? Because it's his responsibility at the end of the day. Who was asked to form the government? Prime minister. When the government falls, who falls? The prime minister. Right? So I blame them. As in to say the responsibility falls there. In this instance, Prime Minister Davis isn't saying it wasn't a political trip after all. He's not saying that. He's saying the exact opposite. He said, after all, as it evolved, this was a political trip. And therefore, I required that the Progressive Liberal Party reimburse the government for the trip. That's what he said. And I am going to pay for my own expense. That's what the prime minister said. But that's not the whole issue. The whole issue is, was it a political trip before the payment was made for the trip? And if so, under what authorization? If there is a protocol, if there is a authorization, if there is a law, it would be great to know. It'd be great to know. If there was not, come on, go to Parliament and put a law in place that says this can happen, or these are the conditions under which it can happen. That's all. If you think it's something that ought to be possible, think it's something that should not be possible, and the law doesn't make it clear, make the law clear so nobody else gets trapped, gets put in this position again. That's how you show people that you're seriously wanting to advance the governance process of the country by saying, you know what, we made a boo-boo. We didn't get this right, and we want others to fall in. We should ensure that future generations of leaders know that these are the rules that govern how things like this should happen. And if they want to change it, let them change it. But in the meantime, we should give them clear guidelines. That's a wonderful approach to take. This text says, lying, I Honestly, thank you for how you're explaining that foolishness with the furniture. We have to stop the petty politics and be truthful how things work. Yeah, that's the idea, man. Let's understand how it works. The future, yes, seriously. This is your response? So this country won't get any better with thinking like this. Really? Oh, I see. Someone should be held accountable legally for this. This is the reason why citizens break the law today, because of collective statements and acts such as this. Shame. Listen to me. You are a person I follow, like I read your texts often. And sometimes you make sense and sometimes you just off your rockers with some of the things you say. Just, I mean, off your doggone rockers. Okay? And in this instance, you are trying to insult my intelligence with this nonsense. First of all, bro, if you don't have a law, you right now, you're a brilliant human being. Tell me which law was broken, Mr. Brilliant Human Being. Tell me which one. And if you know which law was broken, you know, do you know that you are a citizen in the Bahamas, so you therefore have standing in the case? You go to the Commissioner of Police and go file a report. Because you're a brilliant human being. Thinking like ours gets us in trouble. So let's use thinking like yours. Head should roll. That's what you said. Okay, bro. You are a citizen of the Bahamas. This is your country. You have a right to report a crime when it is done. I'm going to give you the next 60 months to go report the crime that you say has happened. 60 months. See how you call people up, will do nothing because you're just a talker. You get the benefit of being anonymous, writing to me and telling me, and I read it, you know, and I read your stuff. You get the benefit of being anonymous. Nobody can call your name. I could call your name, but I'm going to call your name, right? But you say something, some law has been broken, and head should roll. Go to the Commissioner of Police and go file your report, bro. Talking nonsense. This is the reason why citizens break the law. You're lying. Citizens break the law because they are selfish sometimes, they are greedy sometimes, they're ignorant sometimes, and they are why they break the law. Bunch of nonsense talk. But this is the reason why. The reason why people break the law is because sometimes they think like you. They have these highfalutin ideas, but have no stamina to do anything about the ideas they have. But then they like to prick at people who put themselves out there, not anonymously. My name is Zhivago Lang. I'm on a talk show. You know who I am. Not hiding behind no WhatsApp number. Even when the government breaks the law, even when it breaks the law, there are laws in the Bahamas that says that certain ministries have to report to Parliament on an annual basis about their ministry. The Ministry of Education is one of them. When the Ministry of Education, there were years when the Ministry of Education didn't do that. Did any head roll? Come on, man. Wake up. You are not speaking with a child. Nor are you speaking with somebody who has no knowledge or experience in this business. So while I indulge you in reading your nonsense, expect me to call you out on that nonsense too. Because that there ain't nothing but nonsense you wrote. Okay? The point of all of this is, in the end, governance requires light, requires magnification of the conduct of the governors. And where that conduct is either unlawful or suspect or brilliant, that light, that magnification should shine upon it so that all can see what the government is doing. Where there is need to make corrections and adjustments, you do so. Where there is need to commend, you do so. And that's the world. Let's stand around and pretend, get passionate like, oh my God, the whole thing falling apart and blah, 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 blah. No, nonsense. Because some of y'all, when you're sitting down eating your steam, oxtail and white rice and planting, you ain't thinking about none of this. In the same country, what you say going to hell? sitting in your nice home and your air conditioning and your color TV, flat screen with your sofa and all your furnitures and all that. Same country you say going to hell got you living materially the way you're living. Come on, man. Let's be serious. All right. So to my mind, like, what's going to happen from here? I really don't know. The opposition will continue to pick at this because it's something to be picked at until till somebody concedes or gives a clarity that allows it to rest. I won't be dealing with it too much more times, but unless something else evolves. This text is lying. I agree with you and others who said the government has a chance to put laws and policies in place for future events. It reminds me of when the MP for St. Barnabas said he met things in place in beach and parks and he did nothing to correct it. He only did what others did. That's when I lost some respect for him because he said when he was elected that he came to change things to better the country. But his excuse for these double contracts was he met it happening, so he should not be blamed. That was shocking. Okay. I could see your point there. That's practically what you know what amazes me? It amazes me when I hear Bahamians say, every government come in place, they rather than continue what other people are doing, they just stop, review, and cancel everything. But why you vote for change if you didn't want change? If you voted for a change, when people start to change things, why would you then have a problem with change? Because if you voted for change and something was running, stopping it means you just changed it. If something was running and you don't like, the new people don't like how it's running, then reviewing it just makes sense. And if something was going that wasn't going right and you voted against the people who had been doing it because you said it wasn't going right and it was canceled, signed. Change means change. When you vote for change and you get change, you should commend the change. Unless you think, oh, that was a bad change too. Then you should say that. Right? But you vote for change to get change. Right? And so the text is right. If you say you come in to change things, don't say when you get there, oh, this is how they was doing it. So what's the problem? That's the reason? That's your answer? That's your explanation? No, that can't be right. This text says, Mr. Lang, I appreciate your wise words. I agree that there is a chance for PM Davis to make an improvement. I like my PM having a high global profile, but within reason. When Mr. Biden takes Air Force One on a campaign trip and half the Secret Service go with him, he pays the price of a first-class ticket. That's my understanding, too. Because there is an acknowledgement that there is a line. Mr. Davis will do well to mark that line a little brighter. Very well said. Very well said. Very well said. I understand the politics of our world. I understand the politics of our world. I really do. Your whole credibility, your currency is popularity, favorability. That's what you need. You need people to like you. You need people to support you. You need people to be favorable toward you. So you hardly want to hear anything negative said about you. So you get defensive when you are charged with something. When you get defensive when people call out something that might appear to be a mistake or to be a bad judgment or to be a wrongdoing. You know, that's a natural reaction. But it's not your reaction that governance requires. It's your response. Reacting is normal for us. If you get burnt, your body's going to react, right? If you get pinched, your body's going to react. That's normal. That's natural. What you have to do is rise above your reaction to determine what is the appropriate response to this burn, to this pinch. That's the question. So now that this issue has arisen, we can continue in the reaction. Okay? and the reaction merely is a kind of defense. How do I make myself better? How do I make myself be okay in this? That's natural. That's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. Only, the only problem is, as a governor, the response says, how do I make my country better in light of this? The reaction is, how do I make myself better in light of this? In leadership, the response is, us better in light of this. And the only way to make us better is to say, as the text has said, make the light, the line brighter so people could know, listen, bro, you're about ready to cross it. Can you not see? Do not cross it. That's progress. That's advancement. And all of this dialogue, all of this argument, all of this debating would have been worth it for us. Even the mistake would have been worth it for us if we can improve the situation. And Prime Minister Davis does have the opportunity to do that. He's got a demeanor and a posture that doesn't particularly lend itself to real combativeness and confrontationalness and all that kind of stuff. And so he just takes that demeanor, turns it outward toward the country and say, listen, man, this was clearly a problem. We don't need to have this problem in the future. Let's fix it. Let's do things that make sure others can avoid this. That's progress. That's liberal. That's a progressive liberal party. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Babe.
I march the God. The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot. You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Isn't it time you conquered your investment goals? With RF Mutual Funds, you change of investments within a single fund. That means you get access to top-performing local stocks, along with exposure to international markets, add expert management and competitive returns by 25.16% with our targeted equity fund, and you won't just meet your investment goals, you'll conquer them. Get started with RF Mutual Funds today at rfgroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Olang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Let me ask, imagine that this had gone this way, that the reporter for The Guardian, who came across the fact that the Prime Minister and his colleagues had traveled to Bermuda and spoken at this political convention and so forth, And had printed the article that was printed. So we all now know that happened, notwithstanding nobody said anything about it. But that happened, and then immediately the prime minister or his communications director or whoever came out and said, you know, this trip was taken and was really not planned out in any comprehensive way, and for the most part, evolved quite hurriedly. I apologize that we took and did not advise the public that we were taking it, because quite frankly, while in the initial instance I was minded to take this trip as an official trip, notwithstanding, I knew also that the premier would have wanted me to participate in his party's convention. They had a governing party, that I was minded so to do, and was prepared so to do, and I set up the trip with a view to doing exactly as things evolved. Members of my party having also been invited to participate with a party that is a sister party to ours. As the trip evolved, it turned out to be quite more political than it was official. And in light of all that has transpired, I concede that I can see where this has blurred the lines between the political and the official, and that is not a space or place where we want our government to be, because the lines ought to be clearly drawn. And so as a consequence, I have decided that all expenses related to the trip will be paid by the Progressive Liberal Party, so that we will treat the trip as a political trip. But for the future, I am going to lay down clear rules about how we ought to govern ourselves in relation to the political and the governance of this country, because I think we will be served by that. Now, had that happened, tell me what your response and reaction to this would have been. You tell me. It's Texas. Says, you write about how people respond. Imagine grabbing a hot pan, you get burned. But guess what? Your response is you grab the hot pan again instead of responding with getting a towel to grab the hot pan. I think in politics, especially, we keep grabbing the hot pan without getting burned. Okay? So you don't have to... Oh. So you don't have to read this online if you don't want to, but as I told some people, this direct communication is a failure. He did the same thing to the Right Honorable Perry Christie. I told them, don't have him in such a high position to the PM. He says the wrong things. Okay. So what do you think? What do you think would things transpired that way? Might the situation be better received? Might it have been as controversial as it has become? What do you think? I know you are listening, because you didn't send me some text and what have you, so let me know what you think. I'm asking, but if the response was as I just gave, would it have been better? Or would it have been worse? I happen to believe that Bahamians are, many, many Bahamians are reasonable human beings, reasonable, and can accept that you make mistakes, can accept that you make faux pas, and are grateful when you show humility in the face of that error or mistake. But when you double down, I think they get agitated. I think they get aggravated. When you seem to obfuscate, I think they get frustrated and annoyed with what they what they see. So I happen to think that handled differently. And even now today, handled differently. You know, this matter could insofar as the controversy of it is concerned. What do you think? What do I think will happen now next? One or two things is gonna happen next. This is gonna go very, 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 very quiet. Or it'll continue to roll. Continue to roll. So what else is happening beyond this travel issue? BPL CEO, we are being told now, wrote, Minister of Works Alfred says, this is Whitney Hasty, the then CEO of BPL, wrote the Minister of Works. He says a comprehensive letter about the company's fuel hedge program that was designed to lock in prices at the lowest possible price. Says he wrote. Says it was advised in the letter, this is according to Guardian, the NASA Guardian, written by Candy Adams. It says it was advised in the letter that BPL through execution of the hedges was, in quote, seeing the huge benefits given the price of oil on the open market. Hasty wrote, to prevent large movement in fuel charge, timely fuel hedges are executed. These periodic purchases provided layering of the hedges that will result in a smoothing effect to the fuel charge to customers over time. He provided a summary of all the monthly settlements transactions since the inception of the fuel hedging program. And noted, this was a quote from Mr. Hasty, as can be seen in table one below. Up through September 2021, BPL and its customers have benefited by a reduced $30 million fuel cost over the past 13 months. That's $30 million. It is estimated that savings will amount to $55 million. He said, Hasty added, that the reality is hedging has simply allowed for a lower, more stable price as compared to previous years where fuel prices adjust monthly. In response to the document that was brought by the leader of the opposition, says insisted that he had never received a briefing on the hedge strategy or hedge anything. Wow. Mr. says, Madam Speaker, what the honorable member to my recollection stated is that a hedge strategy, was presented and we failed to act. He denied that this was the case. So the minister said he read the letter when it was placed in his hands last night and did not recall seeing it prior. Says called the document a description that was giving background information. Wow. You know, life is perception and reality. So, you know, the minister says, I never got any such letter. So, okay, that's one thing. I like how a CEO of BPL writes a letter to a minister or a briefing note to a minister and it don't get to the minister's desk. Boy, that'd be hard for me to understand. But okay. Okay. Now, that a minister might get the letter, might not actually read it. That's possible too. You know, these things go through permanent secretaries and sometimes permanent secretary, but the permanent secretary will always send a letter addressed to the minister first. The minister may give advice to the guidance, to the direction to the permanent secretary, please send to so-and-so for advice or guidance, blah, 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 and blah. So that's always, but I cannot conceive. I cannot conceive of a scenario. Listen to me. Mr. Hasty would have to be an outright liar to be able to construct that he wrote to the minister about the hedge program, a detailed note, and that not be the case. That would be the boldest lie you could tell. Secondly, there's not a possible chance. No, let me don't say that. It is highly inconceivable that a CEO of a BPL, BTC, would write a minister responsible for that corporation or for relations with that corporation, and that not get to a minister's desk? Jesus save us all if that's possible in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Thirdly, can a minister read something and disregard it? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Don't know. Listen to me now. Let me tell you all something. My name is Shivago Lang, and y'all know I try to be helpful. I sat in the government of the Bahamas. Let me tell you all what is true. And listen to me. Listen to me. Get mad with me if you want, bro. Sister, get mad with me. In the early days of a transition, the mindset of the people coming into office is highly political. They are viewing the world in terms of what them people did and what we came here to do. That is true. Almost everything that the other people did is held suspect, under review, for consideration. And so it isn't inconceivable. You're getting correspondence from all over the place, briefing notes from all over the place. It isn't inconceivable that you decide, oh, that's why we're here. And you could decide, yeah, I read it and so forth and move on. Because this hedging strategy for you as a minister ain't no big deal, because you don't really understand the sensitivity and nuances of it. The only way a minister can get that level of sensitivity to this issue is by a technocrat bringing them that sensitivity, by a permanent secretary, by a financial secretary, by someone saying to the minister, pay attention to this in the early stages. I can easily see how a minister might look at this and not see the urgency of it. I can see that easily. And if the note was written in a fashion that wasn't advocating, wasn't outright saying to the minister action needed to be taken, I could see how the minister took it as a briefing note. And in the process, saw a briefing note that wasn't urging him to any action either. That's why when you are a technician, when you are a bureaucrat, when you are anything in government, when you're writing to the minister and you think action needs to be taken, on your last line, explain the action needing to be taken. Otherwise, you will hear just what you're hearing this minister say. Well, it was a briefing note given background information. But if you read the note and the note is saying, we got all these savings from it, how in the world is that not a call to action? Do you not want to continue saving if you believe? But I can see how it can happen. Because when in the early stages of a transition in government, everything done by the other people, every person put in place is looked up suspectly. Even permanent secretaries, for their own professionalism, I looked at as, oh, they must have put him there because he's a PLP permanent secretary. Or they must have put her there because she's a F&M permanent secretary. They seldom give due regard to the professionalism of people to do their jobs no matter who the heck is in office. So I know the attitude that prevails in them early days. And I can easily see how this get caught in that attitude. Very easily. Anyway. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabbat Relang, your host. We'll be back after this final break.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the
Hey, Lisa. At Hair Fidelity is free. Women Plus Seminar is back.
Oh, yes, it is. My ladies and I are ready to go.
Well, I heard it's open for men, too. So you know my crew and I will be there.
The highly anticipated free Fidelity Women Plus Seminar will be held on Saturday, October 29th at the Bahama Convention Center as we explore solutions towards achieving financial freedom.
The Women's Plus Seminar is free and includes breakfast, 8 sessions, plus over $8,000 in prizes and surprises. Registration and breakfast begin at 8 a.m. with sessions from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Space is limited, so register now for free at fbbwomanplus.com.
Innovation is back, the must-see digital event series from BTC Business. Hear from Don Calantonio, the content king, and many more. Plus, register for the Innovation Pitch Challenge and win up to $15,000 in cash and prizes. Get a booth for $250 and showcase your goods and services at our event. Join us in person at Bahamar's New Providence Ballroom on Friday, October 28th from 12 to 4 p.m. And get ready to network and sell. Call 47SMALL to book a booth today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. If in these last moments you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Man, I retiring, man. Yeah. I know if I get a fish, not a fisherman myself. But I can find something to do. Gardening is down. I'm taking the gardening. I picked me some chili peppers today. I picked me some bell peppers off my tree today. I picked me some cherries off my tree today. My bananas are growing well. So, you know, my farming ain't bad. This text says the reporter did their job, but things was happening so fast in real time that the communication department and the office of the prime minister was not keeping up with real time. I think they spent too much time posting pictures and showing up that they are not doing their job. If PM Davis don't start letting heads roll, he will continue to work hard but lose the people because of foolish mishap and incompetence from people who would not stay focused. I have nothing personal against Mr. Raming, but I am tired watching him not being ready for prime time. Okay, last one for the day. I had a family member who was a permanent secretary, and what he did was, as minister or government change, he would request a meeting with them and put on the table everything that needed real urgent attention. That is what needs to happen, not letter by email, text, or brief letter with no marking urgent on. Well, when the government changes, every minister ordinarily meets on their desk, turnover notes they're called. And these turnover notes tell the minister what are the laws that govern the minister's responsibilities. It outlines major policies, major projects that are being undertaken, major programs and the like. And where there are urgent considerations, they might be included in the turnover notes. So you're right that these things need to happen, but they do. And they do typically happen. I don't know what has been happening of late. I can only tell you what happened when I was in office. Oh, y'all keep trying to get me in trouble. Oh, my gosh. I'm not letting y'all get me in no more trouble than I have already gotten myself. This text is how you retire in when you're supposed to be the next PM. Watch and see. Watch and see. Y'all ever put strawberries in the ground and watch them come up? My listening is a beautiful sight. You ever put yam in the ground and see the yam spreading? It's a beautiful sight. So yeah, you could find that quite appealing, quite attractive. I'm kidding with y'all, man. I'm just, you know. Some days it's hard. It's tricky, these waters, you know. It's tricky because some of us is taking things a little personal. You know, if Chicago says something that beats up on the FNM, ain't no thing. That ain't no problem. Not with the PLP. If Chicago says something that beats up on the PLP, ain't no thing. If it's the FNM, where Chicago's getting trouble. And then if I can say something that the PLP don't like, and the FNM don't like, and then it's a problem. You're trying to navigate these waters with some caution. And my only desire in the things that I'm doing on this show is to help us understand what I know and understand. I don't know a lot, and I don't understand everything. There's many things I don't understand. But I can help with the stuff I do. And yes, I can give you my thoughts and opinions on matters too, and you could disagree with them, and there's no issue, no problem there. And yes, I can be passionate, and I can be belligerent, and I can be aggressive, and I can come across really badly sometimes, yeah. And yes, I can get defensive, just like a lot of you know who to send me these texts, but it's all good. At the end of the day, I can lay my head down because I know my motives. Up y'all. I'm not trying to bring nobody down, but put nobody in the ground. I'm trying to lift human beings up. I'm trying every day to make myself a better person because I know I need to be a better person. I know that every single day. I take inventory of myself, my behavior, my attitude, my thoughts, all my failings, my weaknesses, and I say, Lord, show me, help me, where I can, how to strengthen, make me better. So I ain't looking to nobody eye for no beams. I be trying to take them speck of my own eye. Sometimes I try to take the beams of my own eye, right? So we want to help, and hopefully in our dialogue we can help and push ourselves to do better, to be better. There's no perfect government out there. Prime Minister Davis isn't perfect. None of his cabinet ministers are perfect. Not even close to perfect. None of us are. None of us are. Some of us are better at what we do than others. Some of us are improving. Some of us are really good at some things. At some things, right? And there ain't no perfect people out there. So you think somebody could be in government, don't make no mistakes, don't fall up. Stream on. Show me when you've seen from the time we elected a government in this country that they didn't make no mistakes, didn't mess some things up. Name me the ones. Who? You ain't gonna find that. The government is made up of human beings, and human beings have lapses in judgment. Human beings sometimes are, these are natural tendencies of human beings to be irrational, to be narcissistic, to be short-sighted, to be defensive. You know what I mean? So we then bring those same challenges into the things we do. So yes, you may be president of the company, but that don't absolve you or exclude you from sometimes having the nastiest, pettiest, stupid attitude on planet Earth. You could be a general manager. You could be head of a college, university, institute. doesn't mean you don't have occasions when your judgment lapses. You could be a husband and a wife. You could be beautiful as they come. You could be as handsome as they come. You could be as strong as they come. That don't stop you from being a jerk sometimes. Because all us crazy. Only question is, are you crazy now, my times? So what happens, though, is we react to our craziness and lapses like it's such a shocker that we now need to make people believe it ain't never happened. It ain't never happened. You know what that's like? That's like dropping a whole glass of mayonnaise on the ground and splatter all over the place, and you sprawling yourself over it, trying to pretend for people it ain't never spilled. You know how stupid that look? All we need to do is, whoa, boy, surely messed that up. Lordy, let me see what's the best way to clean this up now. That's what you got to do. Don't try to cover it up. You can't cover up no minis all over the floor, man. The bottle. Listen, man, you all have a great evening. God bless. It's been a pleasure. I trust and hope you have some rest for this evening. God spares life. We'll be back tomorrow. You all have a good one. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host.
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Send you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you make it down the same road. Take a stand, take a stand, everybody.